Agricultural information is made possible in part by a grant from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, the nature of what's to come.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's Friday, February the 24th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures out of Williamsville, Illinois. In agricultural news, 80 U.S. senators say they want to vote on legislation to update the locks and dams on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. But other bills on the docket may put off that tally. The corn growers gear up to give the Secretary of Ag an earful. And speaking of Mike Johanns, he is now speaking out on bird flu and preventing a human pandemic. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. Well, just after the bottom of the hour, Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center will fill us in on the drought in the Southwest and predictions, if there are any, for it to spread northward. And in between, I'll tell you about Explore ACES. It is an invitation to all college-bound kids 12 and up to come visit the Agricultural College right here on the campus of the University of Illinois. More on that two-day event in March later in this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com. In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. March contract in the wheat pit at 368 and a quarter, two higher for the day. May futures up 2.5 cents with a soft red winter wheat at $3.80. Kansas City wheat finished the March contract at $4.34 for the hard red winter wheat, unchanged on the day. From Chicago's March corn pit, 227 and three quarters. The March finished up 4 3/4. May corn up a nickel today at 238 and three quarters. July, 248. They finished 5 higher in December. Futures at 264 and a quarter were up 4.5 cents at the end of this Friday afternoon. Soy complex up 5.5 cents today at 577 and a quarter in the March. The May futures at 590 and a quarter. They were up 5.5. And July futures at 601 and a half were up 5 3/4. November beans 614 up 6.5 cents. The March bean meal at 175.50 up 70. And the March bean oil up 20 today at 22.96. From the Mercantile Exchange, 106.20, the settlement price for the March contract for the feeder cattle up 70, or rather down 75 cents. February live cattle finished at $90.07. They were down 70 cents. And the April lean hogs at 61.42.5. We're down 52.5 cents for the day. At 2 o'clock Central Standard Time, USDA released its latest cattle on feed report. The numbers look like this. On feed as of February the 1st, 107%, placed in January at 116 and marketed in January at 102. On the line with us to help make sense of those numbers and what happened to the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzolo, as he is every Friday afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hi there, Todd.
Mike, of course, with Risk Management Associates out of Lafayette, Indiana. Tell me about this cattle on feed report.
Well, the trade wires are calling it bearish, Todd. We did place 2.2 million head of cattle into feedlots last month, or 116% of last year, 125% of 2004. So it is a negative placement number. The on feed as well was up about 1%. These are, you know, pretty big numbers, and the trade is fearful that we're going to see a little bit more weakness on Monday. Fortunately, the technicals are a little bit oversold, so we'll see how we shake out Monday, but the traders are calling it about 50 cents lower at this point.
It will be interesting to watch that on Monday, and another interesting fact is to watch what's been happening in the corn pit. Now, it finished a nickel higher today, but up about, what, a penny, penny and a quarter for the week, something like that in the March, the December contract for the week up 2 1/4. And on the charts, it makes some interesting formations.
Yeah, we got a real nice new contract high out of December. We were hoping for that and talked about that this morning with the, you know, support of wheat and soybeans at the time. And certainly the outside markets, like the gold especially and the crude oil, were also, you know, favorable to the point where the corn had a nice look to it. This morning, we also had the report that China was looking at possibly suspending exports of corn from March on out due to high domestic prices, we would suspect, and our futures traders sources up there in Chicago would also suspect, that this is more of a political play, less supply and demand fundamentals, mainly because we've got a visit scheduled over there this month, and then Hu Shinto's coming over next month, I think in April. In April he's coming over. So there's a lot of politics going on. We know the currency's being talked a lot about because of the protectionism that's starting to build here in the United States. And, you know, if you're on the outside looking in and you look at politics and you see what we're doing with the port of information and the issue with the Port of Dubai and our Port of Baltimore, and you see how the Congress has, you know, rallied around that on both sides of the aisle, you can kind of imagine what they'll deal with and how they'll handle the Chinese issues as we get it closer to the congressional election. So China is starting to move a little bit in our direction in terms of the grain markets and helping that, and that helped us with our contract highs today.
Yeah, actually, is that a contract high? That's not a contract high, is it? I was thinking the contract high in that Dease contract is actually 269, so it did push way up, but it didn't make it all the way. I'm looking at the December
contract. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yep, that's exactly right. We were dealing with a contract high at 269 back in June of 04.
Yeah,
yep,
you just have
exactly
to go back
right.
A long way in the chart to see that, don't
right.
You? That is a long way back there. It sure looks like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we took out last summer's high.
Yeah, that, and that's where you were looking at. I saw that too. So you go, and that's kind of an important thing as we head into the planting season. We're looking at planting season. We've got an overwhelming size of what's going to be left in the bin at the end of the year, and we're still pushing up into past last summer's highs, and we're headed not too far in that, at least that December contract, from the contract high. You think we can tag up to 270, 275?
Well, the next thing we see as, you know, the next major resistance would be the 273 level, and that was, I believe, back in July of last year when we went up there in the first part of July last year on the monthly December chart, Todd. So there's not a lot of negative mindset out there supply and demand-wise because our commitments year-to-date and exports are up 10%. We see the cattle on feed, and both the placements and on-feed numbers would indicate that we're going to continue to see a real strong feeding demand. I think the only thing that we're really nervous about is the avian flu and the fact that the French maize prices are hitting nine-month lows. In Europe, it has seen a very big spread of the avian flu, and it's in domestic poultry as of the latest information we got today, you know, coming out of France. So those are big issues. If Rotterdam meal prices continue to go lower and French maize prices continue to go lower, it's probably going to be hard to suspend or take away from that market and ignore it, I guess I should say, especially given that the funds are net long almost 132,000 contracts of futures and options in corn as of last Friday's numbers. Haven't seen this Friday's yet, but you've got some pretty overstoked markets. You've got basis widening out. There's good reason to go ahead and try and go up to 273, but there's also some looming issues out there that would say we need to be very, very careful and cautious. We want to go ahead and make another 10% sale in the corn at 265 and be a little bit more careful and not, you know, go shooting big guns towards 273 and do a big sale there. We'd rather do a little bit at 265 and see what happens.
And are you talking on insured bushels? So
no, anticipated production on the corn.
Okay, and then let me ask you, because we've talked about with you about insured bushels on both corn and beans, and then there's anticipated production. So where are your sales in both of those areas, I suppose?
Right. We're staying away from talking about insured bushels in corn this year. We're going to stick with all anticipated production in the corn. The beans, though, we are going ahead and recommended 2 weeks ago, I think it was now, or 2.5 weeks ago, to get 35 to 40% of your insured bushels done.
Correct.
in the beans, and get that done with the cash sales, and hopefully you had calls underneath that from earlier on. We want to go ahead and finish up the rest of those bushels with bought 540 bean puts and utilize the options until June to see if we can get a little bit more market activity to the upside, led by wheat, led by corn, and maybe make a better cash sale, but realize we're also in overvalue territory and not, you know, just not diminish the fact that we are dealing with upcoming South American harvest and also a record U.S. carryover.
So you have 35% sold cash and everything marketed cash and paper then?
That's right. We're trying to tell clients very simply that, not to make it confusing, what we want to do with clients and producers is get to a third to 40% of anticipated production, whether it's corn or beans, using cash and a combination of vehicles if they feel more comfortable doing that. But we don't want to go over 40% in either commodity. of anticipated bushels before planting, and we really don't want to do it in corn because we are nervous that we don't get that, you know, really dry, nice spring and get the corn in the ground as we like to do. So we want to be very careful on overdoing the cash sales on corn, much more so than the beans.
So you're going to add 10% on the corn if we hit 265 and above in the DEES contract, correct?
That's right.
And where will that put you total? And that's a cash sale.
That's right. We won't want to be over 40% in cash sales in the corn, and that 10% would get us there.
Okay, and then for the wheat side, where do you stand?
We're still at two-thirds. We feel like maybe we missed an opportunity to get to 100% on that last run-up, but we're going to wait a little bit. We've got a lot of conflicting information, even in the Midwest. I was in Bowling Green, Ohio this week and did a meeting with the Ohio State ag economist there, and you know, there's a lot of agronomic information out there saying that we don't have the stand, even in the soft red wheat, that we would like to see right now. So it's hard for us to go ahead and pull 100% trigger before we break dormancy. So we're going to sit back and wait a little bit on wheat.
Yeah, and so you're really not very far off the top in that, are you, though, I think, in the wheat? So
you, no, you know, 15, 20 cents. It's just you always feel better about scale-up selling. And
rather than to try to catch it on
yeah,
the downside.
Yeah, exactly. Route. That's it. You know, you hit it on the nose.
Okay, so then it just seems to me that the marketplace appears awfully confusing for producers and anybody who is actually just trading the market as well, given the size of the carryout that we have on hand in the U.S. for at least corn and beans, and what the marketplace has been doing with the funds to the upside. Have you been able to reconcile that in your own mind?
We hope we can next week. You know, we talked about this a little bit. I thank you for bringing it up because we really think delivery and the first notice day on the 28th is going to be very critical and crucial to the trade because you've got cash basis in both corn and beans, but especially beans in many areas widening out. And that's with the futures, you know, not doing very well this week. No beans down 15.5 cents. You know, something's going to have to give, especially in the soybeans, we think, as we get into delivery. And in some areas, cash bean prices, you know, have hit new two-week lows. So we're hopeful that the Chicago Board of Trade price by the March futures becoming the new cash price for the country and the way the funds have acted here in the last 60, 75 days, we're going to see those two come together once again and really give us an answer to which direction this market needs to take. But if we have any chance of getting there and seeing some kind of conclusion to it, it would be this delivery period.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd. Have a nice weekend.
You too, Mike. Mike Zuzula with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Reports. That happens on Friday afternoons. By the way, the Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite the ag programming here at WILL. That center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, you can call 217-383-4606. Here's the forecast. It's pretty easy for Mad Keezer tonight, partly to mostly cloudy. The lows from 20 in far northwestern Illinois to 40 in the far south. And tomorrow, Ed says, it'll be a mix of clouds, some sunshine, windy, cooler. Highs will range from 27 in far northwestern Illinois to 53 in the far south. Now, here's Dave Dickey.
In agricultural news, Congressional Quarterly is reporting that more than 80 U.S. senators want to vote on the Water Resources Development Act, but that other bills on the legislative calendar may delay floor action. Lawmakers return to Washington on Monday, but then have just 3 weeks to complete some major bills before a week-long break for St. Patrick's Day. Meanwhile, the National Corn Growers Association pledged to give USDA Secretary Mike Johanns an earful on the issue at next week's Commodity Classic in Anaheim. NCGA is angered that Johanns puts budget reconciliation ahead of renovation of locks and dams on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. Len Corzine is a past president of NCGA.
He enjoys meeting producers from around the country, and this will be another opportunity for him to do that. But I can assure you that he will definitely hear about his comments about the locks and dams because our grassroots understand the issue.
The House approved the WERDA bill last year by a vote of 406-14. Yesterday, Johanns was in Nebraska addressing bird flu concerns, specifically preventing a pandemic in humans.
The Agriculture Department is very, very involved when it comes to avian influenza and the impact that it is having, not on only on the poultry industry, but the potential for a pandemic, because if this were to mutate and become easily transmissible from one human to another human, then you have a whole different dynamic.
A top international health expert says the U.S. is directly exposed to the threat of bird flu. Bernard Vallet, director of the World Organization for Animal Health, says only Australia and New Zealand are not at significant risk. The H5N1 virus has killed at least 90 people in Asia and Turkey since 2003. Yesterday, France found bird flu at a turkey farm. Tests on whether it's the H5N1 strain are pending. And the H5N1 strain was found in wild birds in two German states today. The U.S. Grains Council is concerned the escalating spread will impact U.S. poultry exports. Eric Erickson says that could translate into reduced feed grain exports.
We have watched poultry consumption fall significantly in countries like Turkey, Egypt, Morocco, Iraq, and other countries in the Middle East, Russia, for instance. And we have calculated that if those levels of reduced consumption are sustained for more than 6 months, we'll see potentially 40 million bushels of corn exports lost because of just the reduced demand in that area of the country, of the world.
Erickson says the good news so far is the disease has been primarily confined to wild flocks. Argentine Agriculture Secretary Miguel Campos met with high-level USDA officials Wednesday to make the point that Monsanto Company is wrong to claim that Argentine farmers have to pay royalties to the company every time they plant its biotech Roundup-ready soybean seeds. Campos says the use of black market biotech seeds does not break U.S. intellectual property laws. Monsanto spokespeople were not immediately available for comment, but previously, company spokespersons have claimed Argentine farmers pay for the company's Roundup-ready soybean seeds only about 20% of the time. The Supreme Court is considering two cases that will affect private property rights. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
The Supreme Court is mulling over two cases that will have a huge impact on the reach of the Clean Water Act. Right now, the issue pegs private property rights against the jurisdiction of the federal government.
If an activity does have a direct impact on navigable water, and it can be proven so, then that falls within the jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act. But if you back up into our farmland and you can't point directly to what I'm doing, I should be able to use my property to better myself and better society.
American Farm Bureau water regulation specialist Don Parrish says the high court's decision will affect a lot of cases, like a recent ruling against a cranberry producer.
What's interesting is that the Corps nor EPA could point to any specific negative effects for this project, and the judges acknowledged that. But the reason the judges decided to grant jurisdiction is that all of these little projects would have a cumulative effect.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. Well, up next, on Friday and Saturday, March 10th and 11th, visitors will have a chance to see what's really going on behind the doors at the University of Illinois, which ranks 8th in Kiplinger's Personal Finance Top 100 Values in Public Colleges. The second annual College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences Explore ACES event will kick off Friday morning, March the 10th. Kids 12 and up are invited to the Ag Campus of the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Explore ACES is a way to introduce them to the wide and varied world of Illinois agriculture, says Senior in Ag Business and Director of Publicity for Explore ACES, Jessica Duvall.
Explore ACES is the College of ACES student recruitment event. A lot of people remember from the past the ACES open house, and a small part of the open house was focused on recruiting, but so we decided just to take that part and expand on it and make the whole event encircled around that. And so basically it's just we open up our doors to the public and are there to answer any questions about admission or housing or financial aid. And the students actually have the exhibits, like they showcase their research projects, and you're able to take tours through labs and tour the different buildings and just really get acquainted with the College of ACES.
The two-day event offers prospective students a chance to sample foods, sit in on real U of I classes, and check out a quarter-scale tractor built by students. Tours of laboratories, the library, greenhouses, and a food science pilot plant are all part of the University of Illinois experience. It is designed to show you ag from the field to the plate and all the career opportunities in between.
Bevere Cafe will be open, and they'll be having like food demonstrations and different things like that, so you'll get to see that. And there's also just all kinds of exhibits. There's a quarter-scale tractor being built by one of the clubs, and there's in the NRES they have different kind of simulators about in the plant sciences lab. You'll get to go through that, and it's kind of the rainforest oasis or tropical oasis or whatever they have, and just a lot of different neat projects that people really don't get to see every day.
Explore ACES is open to the public but is meant for students 12 and up who may be interested in pursuing careers in the food, fiber, fuel, and agriculture sector, as well as those with an interest in studying families and communities. The College of ACES offers degree concentrations in food industry and business consumer economics, international trade, hospitality management, biotechnology, family studies, and much more. Explore ACES is the perfect opportunity to see firsthand the many different options available to students. Explore ACES takes place Friday, March 10th from 9 to 4 and Saturday, March 11th from 10 to 2 on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign's Ag Campus. You can find out more on the Explore ACES website. Free parking is available in Lot E14. That's a parking lot just west of the Assembly Hall, with shuttle buses continuously running to take visitors from the parking lot to both the Engineering Open House and Explore ACES. The two events coincide. Visit the Explore ACES website, by the way, at www.aces.uiuc.edu/ExploreACES, or you can call the ACES Development Office and Career Services at 217-244-4540. Hey, it's hard to believe, but our 2006 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting, that's just, not too terribly far away. March the 7th. Mark your calendars right now for the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. Registration starts at 8:30 Eastern Time, 7:30 Central at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. More on that next week. On the line now with us to talk about the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures out of the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Tell you what, it's hard to focus on the grain market when you're talking about the Beef House.
Oh, you know what? Since you're going to be a lot closer by the time next week comes around, why don't you come over and we'll buy you dinner at the Beef House? You should tell everybody what's up with you and why you're going to come into the area.
Well, I'm going to be moving there effectively next Monday as general manager of Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company, so I'm really excited about that and looking forward to it.
It'll be great to have you in the listening area. People will just keep you in on Fridays, and our thanks to Dave Hastings. I know you talked to him earlier today. He was on Commodity Week last weekend, did a great job, and I guess I hear that he's going to be sticking around. I didn't realize, I thought he was retiring, but he's going on to another position, so we'll get a chance to talk to him some more too, I think.
Yes.
That'll be fantastic. It'll be good to have you in the listening area, and if you get a chance to come to the Beef House on that Tuesday, be sure to do it, and I'll pick up the tab for your meal on that day. Now, tell me about this cash grain market very quickly.
Not a whole lot of change on the nearbys. The processor numbers are still the same in the Feb and March slots. You get out to April, May, and June, July. We saw that back off by a couple cents into the Decatur market. That was showing a pretty stemmy carry, and when the board popped today, we saw that back off. River values have been creeping back in, and, you know, we saw some cash. We're seeing some more cash-related demand. The good export sales today and the talk about China canceling export licenses on corn kind of got us got the whole thing started this morning.
You know, I was just thinking, I'll miss the fact that you'll be right there at the river and Decatur in between, because once you get over here, that river won't be nearly so important as it is where you are today.
Yeah, but you always have to keep an eye on it. That river is an interesting kind of a key indicator on export demand and on transportation demand. So that's something you can't back off of, even if you're a ways away from it.
All right. Well, for the last time from the Williamsville Farmers Co-op, what are your bids for the day?
We are at 206 on nearby corn and 544 on soybeans.
Thanks much, and we'll talk to you from Ludlow next week.
Thank you.
Bruce Bosnard of FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois, located not too terribly far north of Springfield. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Steve Hilberg. Your regional for newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Governor Rod Blagojevich is increasing the pressure on Republican lawmakers to support his call for a new construction program. The Democratic governor's transportation secretary says that without the new construction money, the state will delay up to $80 million worth of road projects. Blagojevich wants to borrow about $3.2 billion to help build roads, schools, and mass transit systems, but Republicans say he doesn't have a solid plan to pay off the debt. State Commerce and Economic Opportunity Director Jack Lavin says he stands behind the agency's record of job growth, despite questions raised by the state auditor general. But Lavin says the DCEO does plan to adjust its reporting procedures after the state audit found that the agency was including projected jobs in the total number of jobs created. Lavin visited Champaign today to award $350,000 in grants to the University of Illinois' Entrepreneurship Center. Authorities in Decatur are investigating a shooting that left two men dead early this morning. Police say 19-year-old Demetrius Miller and 22-year-old Wesley Baker were discovered in a car at about 2:15 this morning. They were pronounced dead at Decatur hospitals. Indiana Senate President Pro Tem Robert Garton says he's killing a bill that would allow wine to be shipped to Hoosier customers. Garton says there's a lawsuit over the shipments and it's Senate policy not to get involved when there's a suit. A Catholic priest who's been administrator at St. Teresa Church in Earlville since last year says he's innocent of the sexual abuse allegations that are forcing him to step down. William Virtue served in about 10 central Illinois churches since 1988. From 2001 to 2003, he was pastor at Catholic churches in Farmer City and Bellflower. A statement released yesterday by the Catholic Diocese of Peoria says the alleged abuse occurred nearly 25 years ago, while Virtue served in the Joliet Diocese. Bloomington-based State Farm Insurance says profits fell 39% last year due to claims driven by a record hurricane season in the United States. The insurer reported record hurricane losses of $6.3 billion to cover claims and expenses for hurricanes Katrina and Rita and other tropical storms. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason, joined now by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, to take a look at the forecast for the weekend and around the Midwest. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It looks like it'll be cooler this weekend than it has been for the week.
Yeah, this 50-degree weather, which is all really unusual, but not very typical for February. We'll be going away. We got basically a dry cold front that's coming through, and we'll bring us some cooler weather for the weekend. Nothing like last weekend, where we were hard pressed to get out of the low teens, but it'll be down in the 30s and low 40s for the most part, and a little bit different than it has been. And it looks like the trend for the next week or so is going to be for normal to slightly below normal temperatures.
I would like to discuss just a bit the drought that's happening in the Southwest and what potential problems it might pose for the Midwest over the coming planting season, if any. Is there any indication that it might spread?
Well, if you look at the charts now, there's the drought's pretty bad now through the northern Texas, Oklahoma, into the plains. It's been very dry so far this month. And, there is a risk that this could persist into the spring and summer seasons and affect the Midwest. Much of Missouri and parts of Iowa now are are being affected. In Missouri in particular, southwest Missouri is starting to see some significant impacts. We've been lucky here in Illinois that we've managed to get some good precip in January. Haven't had much in February, but February normally is a dry month. We only see normally an inch and a half to 2.5 across the state. And the signs are now for the next couple of weeks we might actually see more chances for precipitation, maybe some showers in the middle of this next week and another system next weekend. So we're really just got to watch it very closely. I think if we don't get any decent precip in March, then there's going to be some reason to worry.
Northern end of the state caught up yet?
No, they're not caught up. They certainly saw some improvement last month and early this month. The snow last week did help the far northern edges of Illinois and southern Wisconsin and did mitigate some drought there. But there's still a core there in northwestern Illinois, northwest of Peoria, that really needs some more precipitation.
Steve, we thank you much for joining us today.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hulberger is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County. And that's today's broadcast. It's made possible with support from the First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC. It is an equal housing lender. Join us tomorrow morning for Commodity Week at 11:30 a.m. Central Time when our guest will be Bob Wisner, Iowa State University Extension Ag Economist. That happens at 11:30. If you can't wait, visit us online at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.